Okay, so here is the story about how I almost got put into Planty jail. So, Apartment Botanist was just a few months old, and I was online shopping and experimenting with, buying from here and there and everywhere. And I was particularly looking for this plant called the Dischidia numeralia. Hopefully, I'm saying that right. It's also known as the string of nickels or a button orchid. Really pretty hanging plant with these cute little button round leaves, and couldn't find it anywhere. And it was recommended to me to shop from this place on Etsy that was selling it. It had a listing for it, so I went ahead. I purchased it. It came from South Korea, and it came within a week. Really, really fast. Came. The plant was beautiful, and I thought from there all was well. So a few months later, I started seeing on Instagram these posts pop up about people basically complaining that the USDA was coming over to their house and taking their plant. And it happened to, of course, be the same plant that I had gotten and from the same place. So I was like, oh shoot, I think that the USDA is going to come take my plant. And I remember joking with my family at the time, like, hey guys, I think the government's going to come over and take my plant. And they're like, stop it, Les. Like, you're being so dramatic. And I was like, all right. So then a few weeks later, my mom was over the apartment. She was helping me clean, being really helpful. And all of a sudden, my front buzzer rings. And I talk to my doorman. I'm like, hey, what's up? And he's like, so the USDA is here? And I was like, wait, who? And he was like, the United States Department of Agriculture. And I was like, oh, that USDA. Send them up. So they come up, and I kind of shout to my mom, I was like, hey, Ma, shut the vacuum off. The government's here. And she was like, stop it, Les. Like, the joke's old. I was like, no, really, the government's here. And she starts freaking out, like any good Italian mom would start to do when they think that their child is in trouble or is in danger somehow and is going to get carted off to God knows what. So the agents come up, and they were really sweet. They, explained to me that the plant was here illegally because it didn't have the proper paperwork, the sino-sanitary certificate, saying and indicating that the plant was properly cleaned and that it's allowed to be in the United States. And I was really sad. And I guess in theory, I could have like hidden the plant or said that it had passed away. But my Catholic school guilt wouldn't let me do that. So I gave them the plant. I took some last-minute photos. They were really sweet, thankfully. They felt really bad about having to basically take and destroy the plant. And it was sad to see it go, but big learning lesson about how, the plants that I'm getting from overseas needed the proper paperwork. And my mom was really, really relieved that she didn't have to like bail me out or anything. But big learning lesson that if you don't have the proper paperwork, the USDA might show up at your apartment and freak out your mom. But that's the time I almost got put in Planty jail by the USDA. Doom doo 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 doo. Hey, plant friends, welcome to episode 80 of
Bloom and Grow Radio.
All right, plant friends, episode 80 of Bloom and Grow Radio, which happens to be a belated 2-year birthday for Bloom and Grow Radio, plant friends, November 14th, 2 years ago. I launched the first 3 episodes of the show, and I can't believe we are here 2 years later, 80 episodes in, 5 or 6 live events, live tapings of the show now. I've met so many of you around the country. I've heard from so many of you on Instagram, through email, in the Bloom and Grow Garden Club. I am just beyond humbled and thankful for you guys showing up and being part of this community. Thank you. Thank you for making Bloom and Grow Radio what it is today. It has been my most beautiful surprise and ultimate honor to be helping us all bloom and grow with this podcast and YouTube and Instagram and Facebook and all of the amazing ways that we can all communicate with each other. So thank you so much. If you have ideas for what I should do for my 2-year anniversary of the show, let me know. I need to do a belated birthday something. But to be honest with you guys, I'm currently on vacation. I'm recording this episode before my vacation because right now I'm in Mexico with Billy. So I've disconnected for a bit. So when I get back, I want to plan on some sort of birthday celebration for you guys. So let me know. Hit me up on Instagram if you have any ideas.
Speaking of community, I wanted to thank my new Patreon Plan Friends supporters. You guys are amazing. How many of you that are coming to support the community is unbelievable. I'm so thankful to Kylene Sanchez, Michael Beck, Sterling Frierson came in at over the asking price, and Jody Gazenbach Person. Thank you guys for joining the community. If you are interested in supporting Bloom and Grow Radio monetarily on a monthly basis and getting the password to our private Facebook group full of planty people, I call it the plantiest corner of the internet, you can check the show notes for our Patreon link. Speaking of our Patreon plant supporters, this episode has been highly requested from Patreon plant friends and just people in the community about the laws surrounding plants. Today's episode is a doozy. You've heard from Alessia, apartment botanist, in the cold open of the show. It's all about plant laws. And what I learned with this episode is there are so many laws around plants, and it's so hard to get all of the answers we need because there are so many different sectors of the government and so many different people and so many different laws with different states and different countries. So today's episode is a kind of overview and an entry to the world that us as consumers really don't understand about the love and care and regulation that it takes to get a plant to market. So you're going to hear many different voices today on the podcast because I do many different little mini interviews. The first you heard was Alessia from Apartment Botanist. And she, as you heard in this in the opening, she tells the story of when the USDA showed up to her apartment and seized one of her plants. And plant friends, you feel like this is something crazy that could never happen to you, but this is a thing that happens as plant parents. We order overseas unknowingly. We just choose the wrong vendor. We don't do our homework. You order something, it comes into the country illegally, and then you got to deal with it. You got to deal with the USDA knocking on your door. So when Alessia shared that story with me over a year ago, that kind of planted the seed for me for this episode to help us become more aware of how to not have that happen to you. So I'm so thankful to Alessia for sharing it. So in our conversation today, you're going to hear from three other voices. First, we're going to talk to Lydia Colon, who is the head of the Plant for Planting Policy Unit at the USDA Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, otherwise known as APHIS. So she refers to it as APHIS a lot. That's the Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service for the USDA. And Lydia is in charge of plants that come in from overseas. So we have kind of an overview of a conversation of what happens when you want to order from overseas, like so many of us like to do when we order on eBay or we order on Etsy or order on, you know, all of the different amazing international online companies. Then we are going to talk to Angela Treadwell, who is the founder of Plants Nouveau, which is a company, they like call themselves a breeder's agent. She'll tell you more about it in the interview, but she is going to educate us about plant patents because that's a thing that I had no idea about. And the specific types of plants can actually get patented. Angela is going to walk us through that. And then at the end of the episode, I have my friend Leslie Halleck come on the show to just kind of give an overview of what we need to know as plant parents about. You see a lot of us now, we acquire a bunch of rare plants, we start propagating, and then you see people selling plant cuttings on Instagram or on Facebook or wherever we are. And there's a lot of rules and regulations I think a lot of us don't understand, myself included. So Leslie just gives us a little overview of what we need to know if we might be interested in selling plants. And if you're interested in selling plants, you should go back to episode 22 with Danae from Folia Collective. She walks us through the entire her entire process of starting a plant shop. So we do have a Planty business series on the podcast. You can scroll through and check out all of the different business owners that I've interviewed in the past if that's something you're interested in getting into. So these are just a couple of conversations to whet our palate to kind of understand. The biggest thing I'm understanding this year as I get to know more breeders and growers and businesses is as consumers, we're just so uneducated on how this works and how these plants that we get home, like what goes in to growing them and selling them and distributing them. And as the podcast progresses, I do want to start doing more interviews to kind of unveil that because what more power as a consumer can we have than understanding that and then choosing who to support? So I found these conversations really interesting. The conversations are obviously a little bit more dry because of the subject matter, but I think they're really illuminating. I really hope that they help you. I really hope you all take something from them and that we can all keep blooming and growing together. Thank you, Espoma Organics, for supporting today's episode. Want to get dirty? It's about time for Espoma to start the planty party. I'm so sick, so singing that song about dirt is wrong on so many levels. But you heard it first, plant friends. Espoma Organics is the wonderful family-owned and operated company dedicated to making safe indoor and outdoor gardening products for people, pets, and most importantly, the planet. And for those of you wondering, that was Christina Aguilera's song Dirty, but interpreted by me for Espoma Organics. You're welcome, and I'm sorry, both at the same time. Potting mix, dirt, growing medium, whatever we want to call it. When I started my journey as a plant parent, I would kind of grab whatever plant that I wanted at the store, and I would grab whatever the cheapest soil was at the store at checkout because I didn't know any better. But as my plant collection continued to grow, my knowledge about plants continued to grow. And that's when I realized it is as important to put your plants in a good potting medium as it is to bring home a good plant that is perfectly chosen for your environment. And that's when I started grabbing for Espoma Organics across the board when it came to soil, houseplant fertilizer, and more. I love that Espoma Organics products are obviously organic, but they also come in eco-friendly packaging, and I love that it's a family business. Their soils already come with all of the stuff that our plants need to bloom and grow so happily in it, like yucca extract, mycotone, alfalfa meal, kelp meal, feather meal, earthworm casing, so we don't have to worry about putting it in there. I put most of my plants in their general potting soil, but I also love their cactus mix for my succulents. And if you are someone who likes to make your own mix, they also sell perlite separately, and you can mix and match all of the different soils that they offer. And it is no secret that I am obsessed with their indoor houseplant food and the easy dose container it comes with. They just make fertilizing your plants so easy and hassle-free. And clean, because we all know that I am messy and Billy gets upset when I make a mess. So thank you, Espoma Organics, for making my fertilization schedule easy and mess-free. Also, Espoma cares about the environment. Their plant is 100% solar powered. Like I said, their packaging is environmentally friendly, and the company has a huge zero waste commitment. They are truly plant friends, just good people making good planty products. So to learn more about the organic indoor and outdoor products that Espoma makes for you, visit Espoma.com and see where your local Espoma dealers are, or click the link below in the show notes to go to the Bloom and Grow Espoma Amazon storefront, where I show you all of my favorite Espoma products. Once again, click the link below in the show notes to go to the Espoma storefront to check out the products that I'm using, or you can go to Espoma.com, see all they have to offer, and find what local store is selling their products near you. Okay, back to the show. So let's start off with Lydia Cologne, the head of the Plant for Planting Policy Unit at the USDA APHIS. Lydia, welcome to the Bloom and Grow Radio podcast.
Thank you, Hef.
I am so excited to have you because we have a lot of questions about laws when it comes to these houseplants that we know and love. So to start off, can you talk about your area of the USDA, what the USDA does for plant regulation in our country and what you do for them?
Yeah, I have like 20 years of experience within the agency, I mean APHIS. I'm currently working with a team of people determining the policies and import regulations for plants. You know, as you know, APHIS has a broad mission area of protecting and promoting U.S. agriculture and natural resources, regulating genetically engineered organisms, administering the Animal Welfare Act, and carrying wildlife damage management activities. These efforts also support the overall mission of the agency, USDA, which is to facilitate trade and protect and promote American food and rural development, agriculture, and natural resources.
You guys at the USDA, and you said APHIS, so what does APHIS stand for?
Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service.
Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service. So you guys are in charge of regulating plants that come into the country and then also like across state borders?
APHIS mainly does the federal import regulations for plants imported into the United States. But then the interstate is mainly regulated by the states itself.
And what do you do specifically for APHIS?
I work with the plant import staff. Basically, this is plant health programs. And basically, we allow imports of plant material come into the United States based on an assessed risk We basically work under the Plant Protection Act.
When you say risk, like, what does that mean for someone who has no idea what that act or any of this is?
Well, the Plant Protection Act gives us the authority to regulate plant material in terms of when a plant is a host of a pathogen or an insect, then we analyze the risk of that host, and we determine the import regulations that that plant will need to come into this country, and then to allow the material to come in safer with those restrictions.
Could you give me an example of a plant that maybe would get rejected by you guys?
In this case, I can give you the cotton. The seeds will require a treatment upon arrival because they're major host of like a worm that can cause a lot of damage in United States cotton industry.
Interesting. And I feel like you hear a lot of stuff about like invasive species that like come over from overseas, right?
Yes.
Why is it important for there to be these types of laws and regulations that you guys are so diligently upholding?
The laws and regulations that we put in place are mainly to protect our natural resources, our industry in the United States. They allow us to have safe trade.
We're talking about houseplants specifically. So in the houseplant community, there are lots of very enthusiastic plant parents that we call ourselves. And people in our community will spend an impressive amount of money on ordering some sort of rare exotic plant from Asia or from Brazil or, you know, these more exotic foreign countries. And you hear these stories about people that order plants from Asia and then their plant gets delivered and it comes and gets seized by the government. As a houseplant parent, what do I need to understand about ordering plants internationally?
Yeah, we recommend that if you would like to bring plants from abroad, you make sure that the plant has all the requirements in place. You have all the papers that are required to import that plant material. You know, houseplants can carry pests and diseases. An APHIS, Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, APHIS, allows importation only after our scientists and have evaluated the pest risk that pose that plant. Then we have determined the specific measures that apply during the importation process to bring that plant safely. We recommend that before ordering or buying any plant online or offshore, you consult our import specialist. The information about how to get in contact with us is on our APHIS website.
And then we'll put that in the show notes.
You can obtain the current information about what plant will require to enter the United States.
So when you say you need the paperwork, what is the paperwork required for these plants?
Mostly the plants are imported for propagation purposes to plant it. They will be required an import permit. Now, those are free. You can access the application to apply for a permit also in our APHIS website. But some plant materials, the import requirements may be different, because they have a specific pest risk that's being determined by our scientists and has specific requirements. So it may require a specific declaration in the phytosanitary certificate, which is is being issued offshore in the country of origin. And then you will need to contact the national plant organization of that specific country and determine what type of additional declaration or certification is required by the United States. Because some insects, we consider those bad insects in the United States. Then on the other country that, you know, the origin may be not.
Okay, so a phytosanitary certificate, and that's going to be administered from whoever I'm ordering. I haven't ordered internationally before, but from my friends who I've spoken to, they say it's very important to go through someone who actually sells for a living and not just is selling a random cutting, because it sounds like a lot of people you order internationally from, whoever you're ordering from, will do the paperwork and make sure you have the necessary certificates and permits. you know, I think some people wonder, why on earth does it even matter that I'm ordering this one little plant to come to my apartment in New York City in New York? Like, how is that going to be an issue? But if there's a foreign species of bug that is known in Asia or Brazil, wherever I'm ordering from, that plant could easily carry that bug. And then if that pest gets released into my small little balcony in New York, that can then jump onto the tree that's next to my balcony, which can then jump to the next tree, and then all of a sudden it's spreading.
That's correct.
So what about international orders versus national orders? Because there's a lot of plants, like one of my Patreon supporters, two of them, Lex and Megan, were talking about citrus getting imported from Florida. Like, sometimes with citrus companies that I work with, they can only deliver plants to certain states. So what about just nationally in the United States with shipping plants?
The part of our agency that deals with domestic and eradication efforts, they also put in place domestic laws. They're basically enforced by the Plant Protection Act also, because we still consider that the pest is a quarantine pest, means that can cause a lot of damage to our environmental resources and our agricultural industries. So we have those laws in place for movement. And then basically we work together with the states to control that pest. And then movement is one of the things that we use to control the movement.
But it's interesting that it sounds like different states have different laws, because some states allow plants and some states don't. So why is that the case?
Some of the states have stricter regulations based on the type of industry that they have in their state. So if you have like a southern state that has a lot of citrus industry, it's a major concern for them in comparison with some states that are up to the north.
So say I have a friend in, I don't know, somewhere internationally, say I have a friend in Europe or Canada who has a plant and, you know, a rare variegated Monstera plant, and they took a cutting and it's just a small cutting and they want to send it to me. How legal is that? Is there a size of the plant that then requires this paperwork for border control? Is like a little clipping of one leaf with a few roots as important to document as, you know, a fully rooted plant? How does that work?
For us, there's no difference, not too big of a difference between a shipment that has like 100 plants.
So it sounds like if you're doing anything internationally, you need paperwork, because your plant's going through customs. Also, it sounds like that sounds very time consuming. So it sounds like your plant is going to be held up in the inspection customs area for like a week or two, right? So that plant isn't even seeing light for a while in its little box.
So then customs or border protection are the first set of eyes that will do the inspection. Then if they determine that that plant species needs to be routed to a plant inspection station, then it will take longer. However, there's some plants that don't have a specific permit requirement because they're not for commercial purposes, and the plant itself, the taxa, the species, is, we find out that don't have a specific or a risk of a pest. Let's say it's previously determined. It will require a phytosanitary risk certificate, and then customs will inspect that at the mail facility.
Okay. So what about if I want to send a friend a cutting of a plant? I'm in New York. And what if I want to send a plant to Florida or to Iowa?
From state to state, you will need to contact your local state.
It sounds like there are very specific rules for different states and then different countries, and then also depending what state or country you're in sending. So it sounds like we need resources, everybody listening, that if you want to do some selling, you know, or some cutting exchange, we need a resource to go to. So where would you recommend, if I wanted to send a cutting to someone, going online and figuring out exactly what I need to send to, you know, a friend either within the States or internationally?
Yeah, within the States, you should contact your state regulatory officer in the specific state where the plan is going to be delivered, mm-hmm. and ask if they have any restrictions on the movement of that particular species into their state. However, for international, we have very good resources also in the APHIS webpage. Mm-hmm. We have instructions for travelers, then also how to apply for permits. Then also we have customer service help desk, and then other type of information related to plant material that has restrictions based on if it's an endangered species that, you know, the movement is more restricted by also other agencies like the Fish and Wildlife Services and things like that.
Okay, so figure out where you're sending it to. Since they're receiving it, figure out their regulations by going to their state regulator or their government website, and then going to APHIS to figure out what you need to ship it.
Exactly. If you're offshore, if you're international, you would like to, you know, you're moving into the United States and you would like to bring some plants, you can contact the National Plant Protection Organization, contact offshore on that country, and then ask if the movement of those plants into the United States will need any specific certification.
Thank you, Lydia, for all of that information. As you can tell in the interview, Lydia refers to a lot of different resources, because I think my biggest takeaway from my conversation with her is, man, it is so specific to what state you're in, what state you're in shipping to, what state you're receiving, what country you're in. So it really is up to you to go to the proper website to really figure out what the law is for whatever your specific situation is. And the USDA, the people there, sent us amazing overviews of all the different links that we talked to. So in the show notes and the blog associated with the show notes, which is bloomandgrowradio.com/laws, all of those resources are there. So if you are curious, you can go and check out your specific rules, regulations, and laws. Thank you, Modern Sprout, for supporting today's episode. Plant friends, the holidays are here, and Modern Sprout has the perfect plant or self-care themed gift for every person in your life, no matter what level of plant parent they are. Even if they hate plants, Modern Sprout has a gift for them. And big news, plant friends, if you are listening to this episode in real time, Black Friday is coming, and Modern Sprout is doing something they never do. Once a year on Black Friday, they are offering 25% off of their entire website for you, one day only. So what are my gift ideas from Modern Sprout that I'm going to be using this year? I think I'm going to get my sister one of their grow frames for Christmas. The Modern Sprout grow frames are their new and improved grow lights. They're wall mountable frames that contain grow lights in them with their built-in timer, so you can actually build your plant collection up your wall. They're super sleek and sexy, super easy to install. They're available in three sizes, and they are twice as powerful as last year's line of lights, because Modern Sprout is always improving what they have. And they're so versatile. So I'm getting one for my sister because I think she can use them in her office. Another great gift idea is Modern Sprout's thoughtful and varied gift sets. So they have four different gift sets on their website that pairs one of their self-watering all-inclusive grow kits with a fun collection of items that inspire different actions. So one of their kits that I love is their Unwind kit. It has a self-watering grow your own lavender grow kit, and then it has an eye mask, a really nice pillow spray, and a really relaxing candle to light and use to relax and unwind from a busy day of hustling and bustling in your life. Or if you wanted to go another route, you could get their Celebrate kit that comes with a grow your own cocktail mint grow kit, and then everything you need to fix a delicious botanically inspired cocktail, including one of my favorite one-off products of theirs as well, their herb pinch and pull dish. So it's a brilliantly designed bowl that has four different sizes of sharp holes on the side. So once you harvest that mint that you've grown, you actually run the stem through the sharp hole on the side of the bowl, and it's going to naturally pull off all of the mint leaves into the bowl, and then you're going to have the stem in your hand, because how annoying and awful is that to individually pick each leaf off. So anyway, the Celebrate kit comes with that, some other cocktail accoutrement, and the Grow Your Own Mint kit. They have several other gift set ideas that you got to check out on their website as well. And if you're just looking for a chill $25 under option, Modern Sprout has a ton of really awesome, intentional, brilliantly designed plant accessories or plant inspired accessories that you could get, like their sleek and functional pruning shears, which I'm obsessed with and have now, the herb bowl that I'm obsessed with also that I mentioned, the herb pinch and pull bowl, or maybe even their sweet botanically inspired tea towels. Like I said, plant friends, Modern Sprout has the perfect holiday gift for anyone in your life, whether it's a loved one, maybe a teacher, a hostess, or plant friends, maybe it's yourself. Maybe you want to tell everyone around you that you want one of those grow frames for the holidays. So to check out all of the amazing products that they have, head to modernsprout.com and use code BLOOM15 at checkout for 15% off any day of the year. Or if you want, wait till Black Friday this week and get 25% off anything in the store. That would be a great time to get one of their higher end things. Once again, this Black Friday, you can get 25% off at modernsprout.com on anything on the website, or any other day of the year, use BLOOM15 at checkout for 15% off. Okay, back to the show. Next up, I was curious about the idea of plant patents and why they exist and how they are used and practiced, and patents versus trademarks. And Angela Treadwell from Plants Nouveau explains all of this for us. So let's welcome Angela. Hi, Angela. Thanks for coming on Bloom and Grow Radio to talk patents.
Thanks for having me.
So I'd love to just know a little bit about you and what type of plant lady you are and how you started Plants Nouveau.
Well, I have a degree in ornamental horticulture and landscape design. And my first job just happened to be with Star Roses. I went there to do integrated pest management and got pulled into the new varieties area. The owner of the company just thought that I would be good at it. And so during my tenure there, my first 10 years of my career were spent there, and I got to go to the south of France and look at roses and pick them out and meet breeders and drink wine. And it was a great time as a 20-something-year-old. And I got to name Knockout. So that was one of my last career duties, was naming the Knockout rose. And then I moved on to do the same job for the Chicago Botanic Garden. And I've always been in new plants. It just sort of happened that way. I always wanted to be a landscape designer. I still do landscape design for friends and for myself. So that's my love. But I've always been in new plants. So my backyard is always a mixture of a trial garden with a very well-designed landscape, which is nearly impossible to achieve. I started Plants Nouveau because my husband needed us to come back to the East Coast, and I wasn't allowed to work remotely. So I had to give up my job at the Chicago Botanic Garden. And so we moved back to Baltimore, and I started talking to some of my friends in the industry, and there were a lot of plant breeders who were working with some of the larger companies who were not being paid their royalties or felt like they were being treated like the people didn't care about them. They wanted some more personal attention. And they said, you should start your own company. And so that's how Plants Nouveau started. It started with an echinacea, a coneflower called Pink Double Delight, which I'm happy to say is still being sold 15 years into the making. Wow. And that was our first plant. So we're 15 years old in December. And that's kind of how it got started. It was just by chance that I learned how to do this.
So at Plants Nouveau, you help bring new plants to market and you help get plants patented, right? So why is it important? I didn't even know plants could be patented and that patent law was a thing around plants. So why is it important for nurseries or plant owners to have patents on the plants that they're selling?
Well, we like to look at it like musicians. So every time they write a song, they get a royalty when that song gets played on the air, and that's how they make their money. I look at myself as a plant breeder's agent. So I'm an agent for that plant breeder. And what we do is help them to collect a royalty each time a plant gets sold. And that way they can fund their research and their plant breeding.
Okay. Talk to me about who these people are. I mean, obviously, as consumers, we're like so disconnected from the work and heart and love that goes into developing these plants and bringing them to market, right? That's like a huge thing that my eyes have been open to this year. So who's creating these plants versus who's selling these plants? And why is it important that there's this patent that's like bridging the gap there?
Well, two of the biggest breeders that we work for are actually large commercial breeders. And so they both breed a lot of plants. And I would say 90% of our plants come from those two companies that are in the Netherlands.
And breeders are different than nurseries. Like breeders are their own thing. Like all they do is create plants, right? They're not necessarily growing them to full plant to like be sold. Is that true?
Sometimes. So the two big breeders that we work with also sell plants, but that's not typically the case. So a breeder is typically someone who works at a nursery or someone who does it in their backyard or someone who's just a hobbyist. They could be working in a chemical company and they do this on the side. It's just for fun. And they just take the pollen from one plant and put it on another. They wait for the seeds to develop. They collect the seeds. They sow the seeds and then they look for something different. And so it doesn't matter whether it's on a commercial scale or in Dixie cups on a windowsill. It's pretty much the same process unless they're trying to rescue embryos or trying to cross two plants that don't typically cross very easily, then there's more science involved in it. But so we work with the gamut of breeders. We have people who find things in their backyard that call us. We have small nurseries. We have mail order companies. And then we have professional plant breeders, people with actually PhDs in genetics that are working on projects for us.
Are people looking to get patents on variegated forms of plants that already exist or completely new plants?
Both. It could be a variegated leaf. It could be a different color flower. It could be more flowers. It could be a healthier plant that doesn't get diseases and the nurseries that grow it won't have to spray it for something. It could also be someone taking two totally different plants like a coneflower and a black-eyed Susan, trying to cross them to make a completely different plant.
And are most plants that we're buying at a nursery or at a plant shop patented? Like what on average percentage-wise are patented? Like a pothos, a general green marble pothos isn't patented, right? How does that work?
Probably not. I would say the majority of houseplants, if they're common everyday houseplants, they're not patented. A patent only lasts for 20 years anyway. So if that pothos was patented, it wouldn't still be patented because it's been out for a while. They typically are required to have a tag that says that you can't propagate it. And that's how you can tell. And it'll have a plant patent number. So it'll either say PPAF, which is plant patent applied for, or PP and then a number. So plant patent and then a number, which is usually in the 20,000 range. So you can look on the tags and it'll also say asexual propagation is prohibited, which means you can't take cuttings without a license. So if you're looking at houseplants, wow. I'm sure there are some new ones. I know that they're coming up with new ones all the time. But typically what you see every day at the chain stores is stuff that's not patented.
Are there any houseplants off of the top of your head that you know that are patented that you do see, like that maybe we wouldn't know are necessarily patented?
I know there's a lot of aloes and agaves, and those are sort of coming into the houseplant world that are patented. I don't know of any like snake plants or... I'd have to do some research.
Is Philodendron Brazil patented? I feel like I had heard that.
It's possible. I know they're starting because the houseplant craze is so big right now. Breeders are starting to get back into houseplants.
Uh-huh. One of my listeners, Megan, said the Bonnie spider plant. There's a Bonnie spider plant that she says is patented. And she was asking, if a plant has a patent on it, can you share cuttings with a friend if they're not buying it from you? So what are the rules around cuttings and patented plants?
Well, the rules are that you're not supposed to sell them. So I don't think any breeder or large nursery is going to come after a homeowner who made some baby spider plants. It's when there's someone's doing it in a commercial production setting, so or selling them online, that they can get into trouble.
Okay. So it's if you are selling cuttings of your plants, and we're seeing this a lot now with plant, you know, novices or just plant parents that are propagating just whatever plants they have and throwing them up on Instagram and selling them for a couple of dollars. It sounds like you're not allowed to do that if that plant is patented. And is there a way to find out if a plant is patented? Like, is there a like online resource we could Google the plant that we have and see?
Yes, you can go to the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. It's USPTO.gov, and you can look up any plant name, and it will tell you if there's a patent for it. You can also, like I said, there should be a tag. They're usually required to have a tag, so always pay attention to the tags that are with the plants And sometimes it's really fine print on the back. So I would read the tags very carefully. But like I said, I'm not saying it's okay for a homeowner to do that, but I don't think a plant breeder is going to spend thousands of dollars going after somebody who's selling 100 plants. Although it is against the law.
It is against the law. So what does it take to get a plant patent? So just so we have an idea of the effort that's going into it, like how expensive is it to get a patent and how labor intensive is it?
It depends on what kind of plant. So if you're doing a perennial or an annual or a house plant that grow pretty quickly, you can get it done in a year. So you just have to, you have a color chart and it looks like a paint chart that you get from the hardware store. And so you have to match the color of the leaves, the color of the sexual parts, the color of the flowers. And then if it has fall color or if it changes color, you have to capture all of that information and you have to capture the size of everything down to the tiny little sex parts in the flowers and all the botanical nomenclature. So it can take you up to a year to capture that information if the plant has seasonal interest, if it's a perennial or a shrub. Or
wow. Like a
tree. Sometimes with trees, it takes even longer because they have to get mature enough to have those qualities. So it can take some time or it can be done in a week. It depends on what you're required to collect. And we usually go through a patent agent. It costs about $2,500 to get a plant patent, and it lasts for 20 years. It's very cheap here, considering the costs in the rest of the world. So it costs a lot more in Europe and other countries.
Wow. So it's $2,500. And say I had a listener write in saying, yeah, like I found a variegated species in my backyard. Like, is it ever worth, if you have some sort of variegation, just as a personal thing, to try and get something patented, or really it's not worth the investment?
I actually get emails like that every week from somebody who found something in their backyard. And so we can look at it right away and see if it's going to be viable, if it's going to come true. Because a lot of times, depending on the variegation, if you're looking at variegated plants, you can't propagate it because they would be all over the place and each leaf wouldn't look the same. So if it's something where each leaf is going to look the same and we can propagate it, then yeah, it's definitely worth calling someone like us or emailing us and sending us a picture. That's how a lot of our plants get started. That's how a lot of our breeders get started.
Wow. Because then the idea of collecting a royalty for 20 years on a plant, because you would, I guess, if you get the patent, you can then kind of sell it to a larger scale nursery. And then that's like passive income.
Yes. Now, it's rare that a plant stays popular for 20 years. Typically,
yes,
if there's something really cool, they're going to come up with something even cooler in 5 years. So 5 to 10 years is normal. But like I said, we have that one coneflower that has been 15 years out of its patent that it's still selling. So you never know.
Wow. So if we wanted to learn more information about patents, you gave us that uspto.gov website, but I know that you blog and have a lot of resources. So where can we learn more about patents? Where can we go to find you if we are interested in learning more?
Yeah, our website is plantsnouveau.com, and we have an e-letter that's called The Weeding Gnome. So you can sign up for that. But there is a ton of information on the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office website. Tons of information if anyone has any questions. They pretty much walk you through the whole process. So
you can think before you sell. You can go double check on that website before you do something accidentally illegal.
Right. You can also check on there and see if there's other plants that are similar too. So, because that's how they judge what gets a patent and what doesn't. It has to be different from something else.
And you were saying you would do trademarks as well. So what's the big difference between a plant patent and a plant trademark?
I don't know if you guys have or your customers have been paying attention to the plant tags that come with their plants lately, but a lot of times there's a weird gobbledygook name that's in single quotes. That is the botanical name of the plant. And historically, it was a name that you could pronounce. But now the big companies are making it a breeding code that is unpronounceable so that no one wants to sell that plant under that name, because you wouldn't want to sell a snake plant that had a cultivar name, which is what that name is called, of 61597P, right? Nobody's going to recognize it. So then they put a trademarked name on it so that after the patent is up, after 20 years, they can still collect a different royalty on a trademark name, because people will get hooked on the name and they'll want to buy the Endless Summer Rose or the Endless Summer Hydrangea, even though the patent is off, they still can't sell with that name Endless Summer unless they pay a royalty. So it's a way of extending the income stream. You know, there are lots of people who hold that.
Because does a trademark last forever?
Trademark is 10 years, every 10 years, as long as you want to renew it. And it's way cheaper. So a lot of times, a lot of the big breeders put both on a plant. What we typically tend to do is come up with a series. So if we have a whole bunch of plants in different colors, we will come up with a trademark name that sort of is an umbrella name for that series, and then have each plant have its individual names. But so a patent protects that name in quotes, which is that plant. A trademark is just a name that is not associated with anything. So they can apply it to anything and collect a royalty forever.
They could take that name and put it on a different plant or a different variation of that plant and still be collecting money on it.
Or the same plant and collect money just like they were collecting for the patent, even though the patent is up. Because no nursery is going to want to sell it as 61397P. They're going to want to sell it as Endless Summer. And they'll pay to use that name. Even though if you look at the plant patent, that name is not mentioned anywhere. The only name that's mentioned is that weird code name.
That weird number.
Yeah, it didn't used to be that way. Like our Pink Double Delight, the patent name for that is Pink Double Delight. But, you know, once the 20 years is up, we're kind of done collecting royalties. So it used to be done just with trees because it takes a long time for trees to grow. You figure you know, you can grow an annual in a year. A tree might take 5 to 10 years before the nursery is going to sell it. So you lose part of the patent timeline. So they started doing it with trees. And that was where this all began. But now some of the big growers are doing it with every plant that they come out with. And it's not really the right thing to do, but it's protecting.
Yeah, it sounds kind of shady.
It's legal, but trademarks were really for a series like Coca-Cola or Pepsi. They belong to a group of products.
That's so interesting. Yeah, because then the other question is, these are living organisms. So to be like trademarking them or patenting them as a living, growing thing, also, I feel like that's just a very interesting thing. Like you're not trademarking other living things.
Well, all of our food is patented. Corn, wheat, soybeans, there are patents on all of those crops. Mm-hmm. So it's not unusual. And it's not hurting anything. If you're a native plant person and you're all about diversity, that's what gets hurt, is that instead of buying purple coneflower seeds and spreading them around your yard where you'd get 15 different colors and shapes of purple coneflowers, if you just planted one that had a cultivar name like Pink Double Delight, then your diversity goes down. So that's the big argument for not so much patenting plants, but propagating clones of the same plant. You do lose diversity in the natural world. So it's good to have a combination of both in your garden so that you can have
absolutely
because the bees and the butterflies like seed grown plants. They like things that aren't fancy. So I think it's good for everybody to have a little bit of both. There's an author called Doug Tallamy. He's a University of Delaware entomology professor, and he has a book called Bringing Nature Home. And the one thing I learned from him was that if you're going to have something that doesn't feed something, just look at it as garden art. So if you have to have that fancy variegated holly that doesn't produce any fruit, it's okay, but just know that's your statue and then surround it with plants that produce fruit and flowers that feed the bees and the birds. So I think that's a good way to look at it.
I love that. Yeah, absolutely. It's okay, but you've got to look at the garden as a whole and understand the purpose of what the garden is supposed to be doing. And we can take that thought indoors as well. You've certainly given us a lot to think about. Thank you so much for your expertise and knowledge. And where can we find Plants Nouveau and follow you and learn more from you?
We are on Facebook and Instagram, and Twitter is at Plant Weenie because that's my handle and that's where I post all the Plants Nouveau and personal plant stuff. Instagram is at Plants Nouveau with an underscore in between the names, and Plants Nouveau on Facebook is just Plants Nouveau.
Great. And all those links will be in the show notes. Well, thank you so much, Angela.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, Angela, for all of that information. man, it's just mind-blowing to me, all of this stuff that I don't understand about the plants that I'm buying. If anything Angela said resonates with you guys, the links that we mentioned in our conversation are also in the show notes. So go ahead and check Plants Nouveau out and all of those different resources we talk about. Now, moving on, we've got my plant gal friend, Leslie Halleck, who is just giving us a little PSA and stuff we need to understand about if we are interested in selling our own cuttings that we take from our personal plant collection.
It's really common for new houseplant keepers who are just learning how to propagate more of their own plants to become really enamored, you know, with the idea of selling their cuttings and plant babies. I mean, once you catch the plant bug and start making more of your own plants, sharing them is, of course, a very natural inclination. And certainly as the author of Plant Parenting, which is a book all about how to propagate your own plants, I certainly encourage that and encourage everyone to enjoy learning how to propagate plants. That said, formally selling your plants becomes a real business that does require special licenses. So an example of one such license is a nursery and floral certificate, which I would have to obtain here in the state of Texas, or it might be called something totally different in your state. And there may even be other additional local business licenses that you are required to obtain when you're reselling live product. You will also be required to be a legal business entity in order to obtain such a license, and generally a legal business within the green industry. So there's all sorts of documentation you're going to be required to provide to apply for and obtain a license that allows you to hold and sell plant material. And an important thing to realize is that these licenses put you on the map for things like USDA property plant inspections. And these plant inspections really are necessary to prevent the spread of pests and diseases that can be particularly destructive to agricultural and ornamental crops, and also to stop the import and spread of invasive species. So these restrictions are in place for a really good reason, and there are also additional restrictions on certain plants being sold across state lines to certain states. Citrus, for example, cannot be sold or shipped across state lines into Texas. So I cannot order citrus plants from an online vendor. I have to get them from somebody who is legally allowed to grow them here in the state of Texas. And that is due to really serious diseases that threaten the entire citrus crop industry in states like Texas and Florida. So it's really important. And then, of course, if you're purchasing or shipping plants in or out of the country, there are a lot of other additional legal steps and inspections, phyto certificates that have to be obtained, which I think you have already covered. And then, of course, it's also surprising to many new plant keepers that certain plant cultivars are patented. So just like with music, photography, or writing, the concept of intellectual property also exists within the plant breeding world. It takes a lot of work, money, time, and effort for plant breeders to develop a new cultivar and bring it to market. So there are legal restrictions on you propagating and distributing any plant that is patented. So you have to pay attention to that as well. Certainly, it's going to be commonplace and fine for you to share cuttings and swap plants with your friends and your family for free. Certainly not discouraging you from doing that. However, the same legal restrictions apply to patented plants, even if you are swapping for free, wherever those patents are enforced. But once you start to publicly sell plants, even if it's out of your driveway, just on your social media channel, really anywhere, you have to operate as a legal business with the appropriate licenses to sell those plants. It might seem unnecessary or silly to someone who is not experienced in the plant industry, but there are important reasons for ensuring that plants that are sold in the trade are clean, aren't carrying diseases and pests, viruses, that they're properly identified, and that they are legal for you to sell in your area.
Thank you, Leslie. I love Leslie. She's so helpful, and she just distills it and puts it in such a great way. I feel like my overall takeaway from this entire episode, all of these conversations that we've had, is number one, it's really up to us to empower ourselves. We now have the blog associated with this podcast with all the resources we've discussed. So go ahead, click around, learn more if you're interested in shipping, receiving, getting certificates, anything. All the resources are there for you. But also, you know, understanding the time and care and energy and money that these growers have put into patenting and developing and growing these plants that then come to market. And it's so much more than just taking a cutting, letting it grow roots, and selling it. And it's just been really eye-opening for me. So I hope you take this information and do with it as you please. We're all leaving this episode a little bit more educated. I'm so thankful for all of the amazing people who I interviewed today, who took the time. And I can't wait to bring you more episodes next week. Thank you to our new and old Patreon plan friends. So thankful to you guys and the support that you're giving the show. Thank you so much to our episode sponsors, Espoma Organics and Modern Sprout. Make sure to check the show notes for all of those amazing Modern Sprout offerings as Black Friday and Cyber Monday approach. I can't recommend enough. They have something for everyone. If you are in need of buying gifts for the holiday season, or if you are in need of requesting gifts in the holiday season, their grow frames are so freaking cool. And Espoma Organics, my favorite organic indoor and outdoor potting mixes, horticultural sprays, and plant food and fertilizers. Make sure to check the link in the show notes to go to my Amazon storefront with my favorite Espoma picks, or you can go to espoma.com to find your local dealer. My plant friends, happy holidays shopping, happy holidays, and until the next episode, keep blooming and keep growing. Plant friends, thank you so much for tuning in today. If you like what you heard, make sure you are subscribed to the show so you never miss an episode. And while you're making sure you're subscribed, why don't you head on over to the review section of whatever podcast player you're tuning into and leave us a review. I would greatly appreciate it. If you are interested in more fun and educational planty content, well, plant friend, I've got a whole lot for you. Subscribe to the Bloom and Grow YouTube show, which is my YouTube channel where I bring you along for my personal plant journey, as well as share informational content that pairs with our podcast episodes. Follow me at Bloom and Grow Radio on Instagram for behind-the-scenes sneak peeks at upcoming episodes, my daily planty lessons and thoughts, and most importantly, tune into my Instagram stories where I am constantly talking with you listeners and plant friends and polling you for content ideas, and I'm always interested in seeing what you are loving these days on Instagram. Join the Bloom and Grow mailing list and get a free download of the Molly Mansfield Keep Blooming print that she created exclusively for our community. And if you can, support Bloom and Grow Radio by becoming a plant friend on Patreon. For as little as $4 a month, you not only help me bring these planty and informative episodes to thousands of ears around the world, but you will also get the super secret planty password to our exclusive Bloom and Grow Radio Garden Club Facebook group, which is a wonderfully active group of plant friends of the Bloom and Grow Radio podcast who make up what I like to call the plantiest corner of the internet. It is a lot of fun over there. And as always, my sweet plant friends, I am here for you. If you have ideas for episode topics, guests, or if you're possibly a business interested in sponsoring the show, reach out to me because I am here to help all of you keep blooming and keep growing.